Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by San Francisco State University's graduate business programs offering 5 accredited advanced degrees, the SF State MBA, rigorous, real-world, respected, open house schedule, and more information at mba.sfsu.edu.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. What does the national mortgage settlement mean for California? Attorney General Kamala Harris joined the deal at the last minute after her negotiating team ironed out a side agreement with 5 of the nation's biggest mortgage servicers.
It was not about politics. It was about what could we do to ensure that our homeowners would actually see relief.
Her negotiators were keen, she said, not to repeat what happened with the national settlement with Countrywide Financial in 2008. Half the money was supposed to go toward principal reductions for California homeowners. Many never saw a dime. Many are now asking whether the terms of this deal, even the special terms for California, are worth what state attorneys general are offering in return, immunity from lawsuits over robo-signing and other forms of abusive behavior from banks foreclosing on homes in the aftermath of the housing bust.
We won't know whether or not all of the provisions will ultimately be effective, but they have attempted to strengthen the enforcement provisions in a number of important ways.
Paul Leonard is the California director of the Center for Responsible Lending.
There will be a federally named monitor who will have responsibility for enforcing all the terms of the settlement, but AG Harris plans on naming a California monitor, essentially to backstop the work of the national monitor, including authority to bring enforcement actions to state court in addition to the national monitor's ability to bring these to federal court.
So explain, if you will, this concept of incentives and penalties that basically push these banks to take care of this business within the next 3 years.
The servicers are required to undertake a range of loan modification, including principal reductions. If they don't meet their timelines within the first year, they will pay a certain penalty. After the second year, they will pay a certain penalty.
Leonard also strikes a hopeful note about provisions that attempt to incentivize the banks to spread their efforts across California to include the hardest hit counties. 6 years ago, a federal judge seized control of medical care in California's prisons and appointed a receiver to fix it. At the time, one inmate a week was dying from misdiagnosis, delayed, or shoddy treatment. 6 years later, the receiver says he's just about done, but he's waiting on lawmakers to come through with cash they've already approved to upgrade facilities. KPCC's Julie Small has the story.
At Dual Vocational Institution in Tracy, south of Sacramento, the medical facility is undergoing a seismic retrofit. The 60-year-old building doesn't meet California's safety standards.
Okay. Where's he going down to?
Medical staff work in cramped offices off a narrow corridor. So narrow, correctional officers shout to clear the hallway when they escort an inmate considered dangerous. Inmates wait in holding cages outside tiny exam rooms.
We don't have enough room for the docs and the nurses at the same time.
Dr. Michael Kim oversees inmate medical care at the prison. He says he has to assign nurses to run after-hour clinics to keep up.
There's only limited things that a nurse can do based on their scope of practice. And if doc's not there, it makes it very hard to care for the patient.
A facility built in 1953 just is not able to support the technology of today.
Rebecca Potts oversees the nurses at Dual Vocational Institution.
Our telemedicine is probably a great example.
Medical staff at the prison use high-tech teleconferencing to consult with outside specialists. It speeds up diagnosis and cuts the costs of transporting inmates. But the consults are done in a converted shower that doubles as an office.
We could use just a little more space in there.
Receiver Clark Kelso has plans to give Dual Vocational Institution a little more space as part of a plan to upgrade facilities at all state prisons. The receiver's fired incompetent doctors and hired more qualified staff. He's made sure inmates get to medical appointments and established a mandate for better care. But Kelso says most prison medical staff still work in converted offices, cells, or broom closets. Some exam rooms don't have hot running water.
The facilities just have been in a state of constant disrepair. Insufficient monies have been allocated for basic maintenance, and they've been burdened by a good 10, 12 years of very serious overcrowding that has put a strain on the facilities.
Lawmakers approved $750 million for upgrades a few years ago as part of a prison expansion bill, but they won't release the funds.
We're at this interesting point where the closer you get to being done, everybody suddenly wants to stop.
Corrections Secretary Matthew Cate thinks the receiver needs to scale back his plan.
Part of the problem is the first time we went through, we kind of used the gold standard. What would be ideal in a healthcare facility? Well, in these economic times, what we're doing now is going through and saying what we'll do. You know, what's good enough to make sure that we can handle a shrinking population, because the needs from 6 months ago look totally different than the needs under realignment.
In October, the state began rerouting low-level felons to county jails to comply with a federal court order to cut the prison population in state facilities. Under the governor's realignment plan, the population's fallen by more than 14,000.
The governor's view is, let's see how much we can get out of our existing resources.
Receiver Clark Kelso says even if realignment whittles the prison population down to the goal of 111,000 inmates, that won't solve prison medical care's challenge. He says the inmates who committed more serious violent crimes will stay in state prison for decades, getting older and sicker and needing more care. Kelso says it's hard for state lawmakers to get that concept.
I think it's just a desire not to spend any money, to spend as little as possible on prisons, and a hope that realignment solves everything. And I think it's just difficult at times to convince people that you have to sort of say it about 1,000 times, no, realignment doesn't address this problem.
The federal judge who appointed the receiver said last month he wants Kelso, prison officials, and attorneys for inmates to submit a plan by April on when and how to end federal oversight. Receiver Clark Kelso had planned to finish the job next year, but he says the stalled construction plans could delay the end of the receivership by as much as 2 years. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in Sacramento.
That's the California Report for Friday, February 10th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman, with additional engineering by Seal Muller. Nina Thorson directed the show. Our interns are Andres Barraza and Liz Reed. The editor is Dan Brecky, with help this week from Pat Flynn. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohn. The producer is Victoria Maulione. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as preventing network intrusions and data theft by hackers. Barracuda.com.